Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got em. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges, I yearn for the feeling I earn. All my winners will turn, you had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm a climber with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russin Rocky,
other names. Trade addicts pot, let's go.
I'm Frank in the chat, and I have a trading problem.
I am Rocky Petrella, and I also have a trading problem.
I'm Dave Kluge, and I have a trading problem.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to session 419 of the TradeX podcast, where even though the network went away, the DAP's always here to stay. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. And to properly introduce our guest, I have to play a little clip. So
ask me this question again in June, once we've gotten through the free agency. It's tough to answer right now.
Hi, Dave. Happy June.
How's it going? All right. So what's the question at hand? Remind me.
We will get to that. It is the start of our this is going to be a mailbag today, since we don't have any trades. It got very quiet after people traded for rookie drafts. So before we get into everything, why don't you remind everyone who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do?
Yeah, Dave Kluge. Everything is over at Football Guys, footballguys.com, youtube.com/footballguysfantasy, all that good stuff. Staying busy over here. You know, we are kind of turning that leaf right now. I mean, it's always dynasty season, but at the same time, we're kind of turning the leaf from dynasty to best ball and redraft and high stakes and all that. Like you said, you guys were struggling to find some trades. It does seem like the dust kind of settles this time of year. Mm-hmm. You know, I opened up the show saying have a trade problem. I do have a trade problem right now, in that nobody wants to trade. Like, everybody's so focused on best ball drafts that I'm sending out trades and I can't even get responses from people.
Yes, between best ball and SFB scoring announced last week, yep, which everyone's very excited about. It's been very quiet on the dynasty front, but there's still plenty to talk about. And like I said, we have a lot of questions today, so we'll get through kind of a mailbag, but we can start with
the news,
and the big one finally happened. AJ Brown is a Patriot. I just said a 28 first, essentially. There's a lot of kind of mix of stuff around it, but Jonathan Smith at DFF_S Jonathan02 says, how much does AJ Brown's dynasty value jump now that he is a Patriot, Dave?
You know, I try so hard to be not like super reactive to this stuff. It's obviously a better situation than it was, but I think that if the value for AJ Brown is jumping right now, which I expect it to, I mean, you saw we were just doing an NFFC draft where AJ Brown went inside of round one in a high stakes draft. So like the helium is already there with AJ Brown. This isn't a guy I think you should go out and trade for right now. Like, you should have been trying to trade for him last year, coming off of that terrible game in week one. I feel like right now everybody's trying to buy AJ Brown. That means that there just isn't value to be had there. So he's going to move up the rankings. But I just think this is the worst time to buy on a 29-year-old coming off of not a down season, but not the dominant season that we've grown to expect from AJ Brown. I think if you're buying now, you're just, you need to reevaluate your process a little bit if you're going out and trying to buy AJ Brown at this moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rocky, Mr. Eagles guy.
Yeah. I think AJ Brown could be a little overvalued at this point. Yeah. Even as we go into this, like, not even just right this second, like, he's been having, like Dave said, he is getting older, and he's been, for the last couple of years, he's had multiple, like, nothing major, but multiple leg/knee injuries going on. Like you said, he underperformed last year. Some of that maybe could be attributed to just the whole attitude around him and the Eagles and all that stuff, and maybe he wasn't giving it his all. But I worry about him health wise, and I think it may not be as good as everybody thinks just because he's going to Drake May.
Yeah.
And did you and see then the other rumor that came out that the Rams were interested in AJ Brown?
Yes.
And that he couldn't clear their medical standards. Yes. So like, that, yeah, it's been hamstring injuries, quad injuries, knee injuries, and we see, like, I'm not saying that the end is here. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what I am saying is, like, these big bodied physical wide receivers, when they fall off the age curve, it is not a gentle descent. Like, they fall headfirst off a cliff. And I think that is the fear here. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's definitely in the range of outcomes.
Mm-hmm. And then the other side of this is Devontae, who now has this essentially to himself. They signed a lot of people, as Rocky would tell me. there is, you know, Elijah Moore and Dontavian Wicks and, you know,
Hollywood Brown.
And yeah, Eli Stowers now. So
Samore Toure. They've got names.
So what do we do with Devontae? Is he kind of, would you put him higher than AJ?
I can't put him ahead of AJ Brown because, you know, he's not a young spring chicken. Like, he was drafted a little bit older. He's going into his age 28 season. I'm not putting him ahead of AJ Brown in my rankings, but I think given the expected cost of both these players, I'm much more likely to be trying to buy Devontae Smith. He's a guy that I'd probably be targeting over other positions in startups. I think that we can, you know, I'm not telling you anything you probably don't know already, but like, this should be a career year for Devontae Smith. I think that he's always just kind of been held at bay because of the gravity and the target share that AJ Brown can pull. But I think that if you put Devontae Smith on a team and allow him to be that number one wide receiver, I mean, it's not out of the range of outcomes that he can pull 160, 170 targets and give you a very strong wide receiver one season.
Yeah. Rocky?
Yeah, I agree with Dave pretty much entirely there. I would probably put them on par with each other, basically. Devontae and AJ Brown, like I said, I don't know that he's significantly ahead. I certainly don't think he's behind AJ Brown at this point. And yeah, I expect him to get a lot of targets. It is going to be a new offense, so that could be both a good thing and a bad thing. Maybe Mannion makes it a little more pass heavy, but also maybe, you know, there's some struggles with the new offense. Like, Jalen Hurts is dealing with a new offense almost every year at this point. So,
seems like it.
Yeah. So, that's kind of a, you know, we'll see how that goes. But I do think, like Dave said, he's in probably for the best year statistically of his career.
Yes. And Joey writes in the chat after ending his last two shows saying he's getting ready to go on a cruise. So he's clearly addicted to the content and we appreciate it. But Dave,
Devontae Smith too. Like, there are rookies there and like young players we expect to take on bigger roles, but we don't always see that materialized rookie season. So I think that like long term, they're set up with Mekhi Lemon and Eli Stowers to have more. But I think this year, like, there's really only one vet that can be trusted in Philadelphia, and that's Devontae Smith. So anything extra they can get from the young guys is nice, and they'll be excited about that long term. But I think this year it's very much so just going to be the Devontae Smith show.
Yes. It's funny. I said Elijah Moore before Mekhi Lemon. So clearly he's the second wide receiver, at least for now in Philadelphia. But Dave, last point on this, who's your favorite Eagles wide receiver tight end not named Devontae right now?
It's really tough. I mean, it's Mekhi Lemon or Eli Stowers. I'm really, really allured by what Eli Stowers can do. I think if he was a better blocker, he probably would have gone earlier in the draft, but his blocking limitations caused him to fall. There's been reports that the Eagles are just kind of viewing him as a receiver. And if you look at anybody on that roster that can do the things AJ Brown did, catching those crossing patterns through traffic, making plays after the catch, I think Eli Stowers is best to do that. So again, you know, when I'm talking dynasty, I'm never really talking in a vacuum. Like, in a vacuum, I prefer Mekhi Lemon to Eli Stowers. If I'm in a rookie draft, I'm taking Mekhi Lemon before I'm taking Eli Stowers. But I think when you start looking at the market value of each of these players, Stowers actually becomes the more interesting player to go out and try to acquire.
Mm-hmm. And this isn't probably my like favorite in terms of he's definitely going to be the best or definitely doesn't have the most dynasty value, but I kind of low-key like Wicks this year in Philly. Just because he came from Green Bay, Mannion came from Green Bay. They also, it's only a one-year deal, but it was a pretty significant one-year deal they gave him. So I think he could be a bigger part of this offense than he was in Green Bay. Now, how talented he is and how much he can make of that opportunity, we'll see. Mm-hmm. But I think he could get worked in more than people expect. So I just, that's actually more kind of, I guess, of a sleeper pick there or something than my favorite wide receiver slash tight end.
Yeah, I mean, he'll probably be the wide receiver three, like when they move to a three wide receiver set, my expectation would be that Lemon would probably kick into the slot and then Wicks would be that guy that plays out wide opposite Smith. So, yeah, you know, you look at the pieces there, I think he's got the clearest path to playing time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, Dave, now we go to your guy. Drake London signs a 4-year extension for $141 million, and it's about 100 guaranteed. So, Dave, my question to you is to explain Drake London to me. I've never been as high as him as the industry, and it seems like he usually disappoints based on his ADP, except for last year I wrote down his finishes in TA. But so why does he get put back into I used tier two because I watched your preview with your wide receiver preview with Joey today. So I'm going to say, why does he get put back in the tier two of wide receivers every year?
Because this is a guy with good insulation just from his draft capital. Like, he was drafted top 10 in the NFL draft, and that alone is going to give a player opportunity. But we've seen a 29% or better target share in all but 1 year. And that's like the main thing that I look at is, can a receiver command targets? And he has proven to be able to do that in an elite clip. And then last year, I feel like we saw the breakout happen. There was a 6-week stretch where he averaged 109 yards and a touchdown per game prior to that PCL injury. So he's been held at bay with bad quarterback play his entire career. But I am always trying to buy these wide receivers that have pedigree, that have the good underlying peripheral metrics, that are in bad situations, because it can only get better. So I talked about it a lot last offseason that I thought Michael Penix was the perfect quarterback for Drake London, because if you looked at what he did at Washington, it was just throwing up contested balls to Rome Odunze and Jalen Polk and letting them make plays on the ball. And that's the type of quarterback that Drake London has needed. He got that last year with Michael Penix, and we saw the breakout where he was giving us elite wide receiver one production. So if you look at the whole year, yeah, I think he finishes like the wide receiver 20 or something like that.
Yeah.
But there was a stretch when he was up to speed in the offense before his injury where he was the most productive wide receiver in football. And I think the Falcons know that, and that's why they gave him this mega extension. I just think that, you know, right side of the age curve, pedigree, production, it's all been there for him, and I don't think we've seen the most productive years yet.
Yes. Before Rocky goes, he finished wide receiver 28 last year in TA scoring, but he was wide receiver 8 in points per game. So that is the point kind of Dave's making, but Rocky, go ahead.
I was going to bring that up too, that he was wide receiver 8 in points per game. And Dave kind of mentioned this too, but he's still only going to be 25 this season too, which is kind of insane. It feels like he's been around forever now. But I think Dave said a lot of it. I was a guy too, Frank, that was not very big on London coming out. But like Dave said, he's, even when he wasn't producing, he was always getting targets. And he kind of, like you said, kind of did have that breakthrough last year. And you know, my boy Tua is going to be there now. So, I'm kind of with Dave on this. I've said this before. When I don't like a guy coming out and then I turn around on him, I turn around on him a lot usually. And that's kind of where I'm at with London. I'm pretty high on London myself.
Mm-hmm. I'll say, Rocky, you still got 2 more months too that you can say Drake London is 24. He's going into his age 25 season. But when you really want to sell it, you've still got 2 more months to say he's still just 24 years old. Yes.
Exactly. Would you rather have Drake London or your favorite of AJ/Devontae and a contending 27 first?
Ooh, a contending 2027 first. So we're looking at a late first round pick. I'd go with Drake London.
That's tough for me. I would definitely rather have that than AJ Brown in the pick. Devontae's probably a little higher for me personally. I think I might take Devontae in the pick, but I get why Dave said Drake London.
Yeah. I would probably take the player in the pick, but it's closer than I'd like. I don't think I have London anywhere just because I've never liked his value, but
That's more than a tier down. That's like 2 tiers down for me. Like, you're getting much older and less productive. So, you know, if I'm doing that for a first, I probably want some idea that first is going to be in the first half of round one in 2027. If I'm getting, you know, what's assuredly a late first, I wouldn't feel too great about that.
Right. Which probably wouldn't happen because you're giving an older asset back and to a rebuilder. Right. So, which would be hard. Okay, there was kind of a big trade yesterday that wasn't AJ Brown, and Myles Garrett is a Ram, and Aaron Donald is now talking about coming out of retirement. So, Dave, this was actually in the minor news before I listened to you and Sigmund Bloom yesterday, and that made me put it into the major news because you guys took an interesting spin on it. So this feels like a bit of a rebuild for the Browns, right, where kind of the veterans like Judy and Tillman and, you know, even I know Watson has a step up in the battle, but maybe they look at younger QBs a little longer. So what does this do for you for – any of these players, for Judkins, who could see less carries because they're down longer, or for Boston over Tillman or something like that? What does this do for the offense?
And that's what Sig and I talked about yesterday, is that this, I mean, not nothing dramatic, but I think like this moves Dylan Sampson up for me, a guy who we saw the ability to draw targets at an elite rate, like in his first game ever. I believe it was 8 targets in week one of his rookie season. So, I mean, like, and then we saw that for the rest of the year as well. So if they're going to be in these trailing game scripts, I think that that is going to end up being a benefit for Dylan Sampson, because I do think that, you know, we saw it for Nick Chubb with the longest time in Cleveland. Like, just he wasn't out there on passing downs, and I fear that Quinshon Judkins can end up with the same fate. I think Judkins is a little bit better of a pass catcher than Nick Chubb, but it's definitely not his primary skill set, and they have Sampson to do that. I do think with some of the other guys, like, if you want to see what you have, I think if they get some promise from Deshaun Watson, they're going to extend him. Just sunk cost value is a very real thing, and there have already been reports that if he looks good, they're going to try to bring him back on a team-friendly deal. So I don't know if there's any other team out there right now that wants to deal with the Deshaun Watson headache. And I think that because they have so many young pass catchers there, Casey Concepcion, Denzel Boston, I think Cedric Tillman, like, I'd still even lump him in with the young pass catchers because we've seen so little from him. And then they've got Joe Royer and Harold Fannin and Quinshon Judkins. I think that if they can get good play from Deshaun Watson, he's best suited to help develop these guys and help them kind of learn at the NFL level. So I think if we're seeing like anything near or above league average play from Deshaun Watson, that kind of closes the door on Shedeur Sanders and Dylan Gabriel and these other guys. But I think that it is very good for the pass catchers in Cleveland if they can get some semblance of just mediocre quarterback play.
Yep. Merky?
That's my only concern, is can they even get mediocre quarterback play?
Right. I'll ask.
And because of that, I mean, the one guy that most sticks out for me is Fannin, just because we've already seen him do it with poor quarterback play and still be able to put up points, especially in tight end premium. So the jury's out on the rookies, obviously. It's probably not great for Judkins, like we were saying, that they'll be trailing more. So Fannin is the only guy that's kind of stock up for me. And I guess, like Dave said, maybe a little bit for Dylan Sampson, because he's the pass catching back. But I'm worried about everybody else, just because I with London, I turned around big time and like him more. And Watson, I was buying like all over the place when he was not playing and expecting good things when he came back, because I knew he'd be back eventually. And I am way out on Watson now. So
yeah,
I still have too many shares. I just think it's going to be so bad there that I'm worried about everybody, kind of, like you said, except Fannin, because he did it in a bunch of crap anyway. So
And I don't know. I'm such a sucker for Todd Monken. Like, I just think that he is a very good coach. Like, dating back to his time at Georgia, like, I've always been a fan of the offenses that he's able to install. And when I look at the pieces that they have here in Cleveland, it's very reminiscent of what they had in Baltimore over the last couple of years and what they had at Georgia, where I can see Casey Concepcion being that move receiver that's kind of all over the formation. They've got the two tight end duo with Harold Fannin and Joe Royer. So I kind of like what they're putting together in Cleveland. And I know, like, it is blasphemy to say that, like, you like what Cleveland's doing in the offseason or buying in on Cleveland, but I think that stink around the franchise has opened up a lot of values with a lot of the different players there. I mean, I'm in a startup right now where Casey Concepcion, a first-round rookie wide receiver, fell to me. Hold on, I got to look real quickly, but it was way later than I expected. Yeah, I got Casey Concepcion at the 6:04, and that is not where you should be seeing first-round wide receivers going, but you're getting that discount because it's Cleveland.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I will say I do like ahead. Where Cleveland's going overall. I'm just concerned mm-hmm. until they have a quarterback that I actually mm-hmm. need for fantasy purposes. Yes.
100%.
It is yeah. kind of a win-win,
they've really
right?
kind of turned it around in terms of an organization. Like, they've been picking yeah. up picks like nobody's business. So.
Yeah. Right. It is kind of a win-win, right? If Watson's good, then the assets are better. And if Watson's bad, then Arch or Dante's coming in next year and the assets are better. So
exactly.
This could be a buying window, maybe not now, but wait till Judkins is RB24 in the 2026 season and then go start looking for what he could be next year. So
I will say with the rookie coming in next year, though, I'd still say you could be looking at two full years of like poor production mm-hmm. from the other skill players fantasy wise, because most rookie quarterbacks aren't going to come in and boost up your guy's fantasy value.
Right.
And if they do, it's usually one guy. Like, we very, aside yeah. from CJ Stroud, like what he did with Tank Dell and Nico Collins, we almost never see a rookie quarterback supporting more than one weapon. So if a rookie does come in there, there's like four or five young pieces that we're excited mm-hmm. about in Cleveland, but then we could be looking at a 2-3 year window for them to kind yeah. of take off.
Yeah. Anything on the Rams side worried about Darnold having to play Aaron Donald and Myles Garrett twice a year now, and Cardinals they are going to stink.
They went from being a top five defense to a top two defense. Like, I don't think it changes things that much for the Rams. It's just, I like the way they build that team there. Like, mm-hmm. F them picks. They're just going to go out and just put those picks for superstars, and it just keeps working. Like, we keep waiting for that championship window to close, and they're like, just kidding. Now we've got Myles Garrett. And,
yeah. Now we're just going to keep doing it like this. It's crazy. The Giants signed the entire retirement home yesterday. They signed Odell Beckham Jr., Juju, and Braxton Berrios. So my first question was, is this a window into neighbors? And then Dynastud's question was essentially, please tell me why I should be hopeful for the 2026 Giants offense. So, Dave, what do we think about neighbors and then the offense as a whole?
Well, I just took neighbors at the 303 in a high stakes draft. And, you know, Joey and I, we were drafting that one together. I thought it was a little bit rich for him, but I think the hope with neighbors is that you're just getting that second half of the season. I think at this point, right. you know, we can really look at just kind of a wash for the early part of the season. I want to try to look it up, but it's going to be so hard to pull it up and Sleeper on the fly. But I just recently made a trade for Malik Neighbors because I think now is the time that you go out and buy in. You know, I've been on this show enough. You guys probably know how I operate. It causes all sorts of mayhem on Twitter. But like, whatever everybody is doing, I'm doing the opposite. So like, when a video comes out of Malik Neighbors limping around on a baseball diamond and everybody says, oh, my God, Malik Neighbors is hurt, this is terrifying, I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy as much Malik Neighbors as I can. When Jonathan Brooks tears his ACL his rookie season and everyone says this is the end of the road for Jonathan Brooks, I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy Jonathan Brooks everywhere I can. So I think right now the gut reaction is that things are bad for Neighbors. We got to remember we're still months away from the season kicking off. And I just talked about this on the live stream, but like, you know, we're a couple weeks removed from the second procedure that Malik Neighbors had on his knee. So yeah, he's going to be limping right now. He's not going to look 100%, but we heard that that was a very non-intrusive injury, that he was hopefully on track to play week one. So the most recent memory we have is a stiff leg Malik Neighbors running to first base and everybody saying, oh my God, the MetLife turf took another victim. You know, this is it for Malik Neighbors. And maybe he does get out the gate slow, but this is still Malik Neighbors. Guy drafted top 10, a guy who's given us elite production his rookie season. If anybody is selling for anything less than a top 5 dynasty wide receiver value, I'm still buying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with Dave here. These signings, I don't think, like, it could just be early season, you know.
This is ticket sales.
Veteran leadership.
This is OBJ ticket sales.
Exactly, that too.
100%.
But you know, none of these guys are going to have a significant role, whether Neighbors is hurt or not. So these signings, I don't think it's, if anything, it just means it could mean that they're a little worried about how he's, you know, going to be the start of the season. We were expecting that already. So, but again, even if he's not playing, I don't even see these guys doing anything. So, like, it's not like I'm worried about, you know, Neighbors that much. If they were that worried, I think they'd get something better than OBJ or Juju.
I think these are camp bodies. Odell has familiarity with the Giants. Juju's got familiarity with Matt Nagy. And Braxton Berrios, he's going to return punts in practice. Yeah. Like, I'm not too worried about any of these guys.
No. We can get to the minor news. Andy Reid says he does not expect Rice to get suspended. Watson has a leg up in the Cleveland QB battle per Jeremy Feller. And Puka's out of rehab. He did his press conference. He seems clean, good to go, back in camp. So everything's good with Puka. Good for him. And on Neighbors, by the way, on the softball thing, if I'm Malik Neighbors and I just had this knee surgery 2 weeks ago, I'm not going 100% at a softball game either. So, like, I agree. We can pump the brakes on him kind of dogging it to first on a softball game.
I agree. Yes.
Yeah. So we don't have trades tonight, like I said, and since we don't have any trades, I can't do the drop. So I threw together a listener questions drop, so we're going
to
do it now.
You've got mail.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
I have no idea!
It's not my best work, but it's very thrown together.
If you can work Arnold in there, I think it's a good job.
Yeah.
So we can start with David at X. Chain Bangers X, which I think is Brain Burst per Joey, so we'll have to confirm that. He said, ask Dave why he hates Cam Scadabo and if he is on Tyrone Tracy's payroll. Also, what are his three favorite things about Joey Wright? You can keep that to like one or two if you don't have three. That's fine.
I like Cam Scadabo, but I saw his foot basically get detached from his body last year. Mm-hmm. Like, I have some serious concerns that he is going to be ready for week one. I will say, though, again, like, reacting to things that we just saw in the news, I did see him stick a backflip pretty easily. I don't know if you guys saw that clip going around from the same softball tournament. Yeah,
I'm like, so dude, please stop doing backflips like in the middle of a softball game.
Right. Yeah, like where Malik Neighbors is like limping and trying to be ginger. Cam Scadabo was just out here doing backflips because he's a psychopath. So
yeah.
That my fear has been entirely with the injury. I mean, dislocated ankle, ruptured his deltoid, tore the ligament, like everything. Like, it was like skin basically holding his foot to his body. And even that, like, it was an open fracture as well. Where like bone, like, it was a bad, bad break. But I don't know. I feel like every single time I see a video of Scadabo, I'm starting to revisit this take a little bit, because my fear was that Scadabo wouldn't be ready this year and that he wouldn't be back to 100% and that Tyrone Tracy would be that early season guy. First of all, the Giants have a really nice early season schedule. Like, their first four games are all against plus opponents. So that's why I really like Scadabo, as a guy that you can draft early, or I'm sorry, that you could draft late, that if you're drafting one of those hero RB or zero RB teams where you're loaded up with Nick Singletons and Catron Allens and these rookies that you're waiting to come on, that you could hopefully get some early season production from Tyrone Tracy. But every time I see a clip of Cam Scadabo, I'm getting a little more nervous about that take.
Rocky, do you like Cam Scadabo still, even though he's coming off the injury?
Yeah, I mean, like Dave said, there's always concern when you see something that bad. But I don't have much Scadabo either. And it's partially just, especially after seeing him in the NFL, the way he plays looks like it's going to lead to more injury. He's just a wrecking ball. And him and Dart, I have concerns about, even though I kind of love Dart more than most people. But just they seem very reckless out there on the field with their bodies, and it concerns me a little bit. But overall, as a player, yeah, I mean, he's fine. I'm not super high on Scadabo. I don't think I'm higher than the consensus, but I'm definitely more concerned injury-wise, even beyond this going forward.
Mm-hmm. And then Joey Wright, thoughtful gift giver, has a great laugh and is really good at helping welcome new people in the industry.
Yes, I agree with that completely. And I will say one nice thing about Joey, because I've been, you know, going against him since he called me an idiot last Friday. But I think Joey has an unbelievable ability to laugh at himself that takes a certain level of confidence in yourself that I do not have. And I think that's unbelievably important in a person. So I love that about him. Okay. From Kevin, at clearly not Kevin, with the Saints having drafted Tyson, do you think Olave sticks around the Saints long term, or do you think he finds a new team in free agency or a trade this season?
I think he's going to be there long term. Like, we've seen Kellen Moore offenses have been able to support multiple receivers here. I hadn't even thought of the possibility that they like drafted Tyson to be the Chris Olave replacement. Mm-hmm. I assumed that they, like, you know, Tyson or Olave is probably getting extended, if not before the season kicks off at some point during this season. I don't think that they're planning to replace or move on from Tyson. I think the hope is like, hey, let's see what we have in Tyler Shuck. We got some very good promising moments from him his rookie season. Now let's bring in some more weapons, because he did that with only Chris Olave. Now let's bring in Jordan Tyson and Oscar Delp and give him some more pieces around here and see what he really is. I think that they're planning to build around this nucleus. And if Shuck isn't the guy, then they've got a good system that they could drop another quarterback into.
Yeah, yeah. There's no law that says you can't have two really good wide receivers on your team. We were just talking about a duo that's been really good the last few years, in Brown and Smith, AJ Brown and Devonta Smith. So yeah, I don't think that's the plan at all. I think it's, yeah, the idea is just to have two really good options for them, for Shuck going forward.
Yes. And Kevin's answer, so my question this week was, what's your favorite summer activity? And we're going to get to why that is a question in a second. He says he enjoys listening to baseball, mainly Cubs games, while doing summer things. And Jonathan says a good cookout, great food, music, family, friends. I love it. So here's why I asked this question. I am scrolling Twitter on Sunday or Monday, and I see Dave Kluge on the top of a mountain in negative 20 degrees in June. In the most Davy Crockett thing I've ever seen in my life. It's like summer everywhere else, and Dave's freezing at the top of a mountain. So, Dave, your favorite summer activity, it looks like it's being cold. So
yeah, I love climbing mountains. I don't know what it is. It's good for the character. It's good for the soul. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's one of those things that, like, I've had friends come out and visit me in Colorado before, and I'm like, you're going to hate me for this, but we're waking up at 2 a.m. We're going to drive out to the mountains, and we're going to go climb a mountain. And they're like, no. And then we do it. And it's just like such a gratifying, fulfilling experience. So this one specifically, I got in way over my head. I started the hike at about 4 a.m., had to hike through a dark forest, which I'm also used to doing these like more in July when the sun comes up a little bit earlier. So this, I'm hiking for like an hour and a half through a dark forest by myself. I get up above the tree lines. I expect it to be like a nice summer day, and immediately there are just dark clouds, wind swirling everywhere. So, you know, even on like the bad days, you can still sometimes get like 30, 40 degrees up on top of the summit. But yeah, this Saturday, negative 20, 70 mile an hour winds. Like, I couldn't even stand upright because the winds were blowing me over. But it's good for the soul. It's good for the character. Being able to push yourself like that, and then like literally climbing a mountain. Like, it's just there's few things as gratifying as getting out of your car and just huffing it up a 14,000 foot mountain. Yeah.
You look like a cookout guy too, like someone who like kills a deer and brings it home and cooks it.
No, I'm not a hunter, but I am quite a griller. I do love grilling, but I usually buy my meats at the store.
Yeah. Rocky, are you climbing mountains in the summer?
I am never climbing a mountain in my life, I don't think. So I definitely haven't. I don't really plan to, but good for Dave that he's doing that. I wish I had the capacity to do that. I'm way too out of shape to be climbing mountains. And like you said, it's not like I have a lot of options around me to go mountain climbing. So
yes.
I don't know about a lot of summer activities. I love a cookout and grill, but I don't grill myself really. I don't have a grill. So, but I love when other people do it and feed me food. And I guess my main summer activity is we usually do a week long trip, but also day trips down the Jersey Shore, which is always a good time. We go to Wildwood, we go to the, which has a huge boardwalk. We did that dating back to when the kids were little, but it's still a lot of fun. Even if you don't have small kids, there's like all kinds of, you know, ice cream and hot dogs and all that kind of stuff on the boardwalk, plus shops. And if you want to do the ride thing. So that's what comes to mind for me.
Yeah. Dave will appreciate this as with some Chicago roots, but I am always like up in Wisconsin at the lakes, and anytime I can get up there in the summer is a much better week for me than I can experience here in Chicago. But there's always plenty of things to do in Chicago. There's architecture tours, which are not about architecture, people. I can promise you that right now. It's about sitting on a boat on the river, and you can listen to some architecture while you're at it. So it's a lot of fun.
Have you done Door County up in Wisconsin?
I have. I did when I was a kid. I haven't done it as an adult yet.
My wife and I did that our last year, actually. We moved to Colorado in 2018, and fall of 2017, we did a weekend up in Door County, and it's just, I've been up there a few times. It's just like such a magical place. I love it. And that's, I think a lot of people don't realize that about Chicago. It's like you drive an hour or two north and you've got all of these beautiful areas in Wisconsin, but then you could also drive around the south bend of Lake Michigan and get to like New Buffalo or somewhere out there in Michigan where they've got some beautiful areas as well.
Or Hammond, Indiana, where the Bear Stadium's going. It's great. I can't believe they messed that up. Okay. Now, Dave, you've been preparing 6 months for this question. This is the question back from June. So,
all right,
what are your buy low teams you are targeting this offseason?
Love this because this is the time of year that I like to have these conversations. Yes. And I'm going to go with the New York Jets, a team that I just talked about with Jeff Bell on the AFC East preview that we just did. I'm starting to get some Colts vibes, like last year's Colts. You know, a lot of people had just written them off as a joke. They were talking about how Tyler Warren was a terrible pick inside of round one. Daniel Jones was just the laughing stock of the NFL. And now I look at what the Jets did this year, drafting Kenyon Sadiq and getting ridiculed for that pick, bringing in Geno Smith. But they've also got Omar Cooper, another very talented young pass catcher in this offense as well. And it's kind of funny that like people don't like the Breece Hall extension. Like, he is such a talented player, still on the right side of the age curve, has proven to be one of the best running backs in football. So I look at this team right now. I think they have a lot of exciting pieces with Garrett Wilson and didn't even talk about Mason Taylor, who showed some flashes last year before he picked up that neck injury. And now I think Geno Smith, coming off of a very bad year where Brock Bowers was injured, Ashton Jeansey was a rookie, the offensive line was banged up and the worst in the NFL. Geno Smith was dealing with a leg injury himself that we forget that just 2 years ago he was supporting multiple wide receiver ones in Seattle. So I think the Jets are a team right now that people are just laughing at and pointing their fingers at and refusing to draft. And I see all of these players like Breece Hall, Garrett Wilson, Kenyon Sadiq, Omar Cooper, Geno Smith. These are all guys that I think are priced way below where they should be, not just in Dynasty, in best ball, in redraft. Mm-hmm. The Jets are a team that I'm going out and trying to acquire right now for cheap.
Yeah, one of the guys laughing and pointing at the Jets is to my right, so he can. So I think I have some questions for you, Dave. First off, does Braylon Allen scare you for Breece Hall's upside slash where he's kind of valued for you?
Not really, and I do like Braylon Allen, but I think that when you make a financial commitment like you do to Breece Hall, you make that commitment with the intention that that's going to be your guy. And last year, Breece Hall had nearly a 75% opportunity share. I think it was like 73.9%, whatever it was. It was fifth best in the NFL. And that's the type of workload that he's gotten pretty much anytime he's been healthy. So I like Braylon Allen, and I think that he is a good buy low candidate. I mean, he's a guy that you can get round 18, 19, 20 are your best ball drafts right now. You can probably get him for a third round pick in your rookie drafts. And I think that, you know, the contingent upside is there, but I don't expect him to bite into Breece's workload.
Yeah. Was that 75% opportunity share with Braylon Allen? Because there was, he got hurt kind of in the beginning of the season, but there was a lot of worries that Braylon Allen was kind of taking the goal line and all that stuff with Breece Hall. Is that the same stat?
Yeah, that with him? That's just overall on the whole season. So that, obviously Braylon Allen missed some time, but that is, you know, with Braylon Allen, Isaiah Davis, and Breece Hall, 75% of the touches. And like, maybe it's not exactly 75, but it was around there. I know it was fifth best in the league.
Yeah. And then one more question before we see if you convinced Rocky. Would you trade a contending second for Geno to be your third quarterback?
No. I think that's a little bit too rich. You know, I'd probably, if I'm buying Geno Smith, probably want like a third round pick is probably the most I'm willing to pay there.
Rocky, did he convince you? You're buying Jets now?
Yeah, okay.
Well, no, Wilson at least.
At least for Dynasty, yes. I have grave concerns about this season because, again, quarterback. I just think Geno is not very good. So it might even be like the better time to buy them would be later this year. Or
like with the Browns, right? It's the same path, right?
Yeah, with like after they are all underperforming because Geno can't, you know, hit the broadside of a barn or something. So, until they get the quarterback situation right, I'm always scared of the Jets, and they never get the quarterback situation right. That's my, like, even when Geno's gone next year, most likely, like, are they going to pick another Zach Wilson or something? Like, you know, mm-hmm. I'm always scared of the Jets. So I got to see that young quarterback come in and actually be good to believe it. But I do like – he said the one guy. I've always liked Garrett Wilson. He's mm-hmm. basically produced through all the bad quarterbacking, maybe not as highly as we would have hoped given his talent because of the bad quarterbacking. But even with that, he's generally been high-end wide receiver two range, even with, like, horrible quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. Like, we talk – I feel like the Browns and the Jets kind of – on similar trajectories right now, like both teams that like had multiple firsts this year are going to have multiple firsts next year, or both kind of a quarterback away, but have some fun, exciting pieces. Mm-hmm. Just imagine if the Jets just stuck with Sam Darnold and if the Browns just stuck with Baker Mayfield, we wouldn't have any of these concerns about like what the quarterback of the future is going to look like. Like they did draft the guy. They just didn't develop and keep that guy. They moved on a little bit too early. So hopefully they can learn from those mistakes.
I'd be worried that those two wouldn't have become what they become in those respective places. I think their talent was always there.
I say all the time, you know, there's always like the what if the Bears took Patrick Mahomes instead of Mitch Trubisky.
I hate that argument. He wouldn't have been Mahomes. Mahomes
would have been backing up Josh Allen in Buffalo in 5 years, and Mitch Trubisky would be winning championships with Andy Reid. Right. Like, that's what would have happened.
Right. It's funny. I've been burned by the Jets two of the last 3 years. In a league I played with Rocky at the time, I spent a 23 first on Zach Wilson. And then last year I said the Jets would be a top 10 offense. So I'm ready to be hurt again, I guess. So
a lot of Justin Fields last year.
Frank can't quit the Jets.
I cannot. I'm like the Breece Hall guy. And I hate that I've, you know, had to watch him be so down the last couple of years. So hopefully he brings it back. Okay. As a lead into this question, because it's on Loveland, Dave, I will tell you, I tried to make a trade before the show for the content. I offered Nico Collins for Colston Loveland straight up in tight end premium, and I was turned down.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Nobody's selling Loveland right now. Everybody's holding on to him as tight as they can.
Yeah. So leading into the question, he says the hype for Loveland is off the charts, but what are the realistic outcomes for his dynasty stock? What would we have to do to ascend to the Bowers McBride tier? He might be there already. What would we be considered as expected at this point? And what would be a disappointment that drops him into the fray, which I think is a really good word for what tight end rankings are right now, is the fray.
I mean, we see that, right? Like, Sam Laporta was like the consensus dynasty tight end one after his rookie season and spiraled after that. In that same rookie class, we were holding on to hope for Dalton Kincaid, who a lot of people had inside the top three, inside the top five. So Kyle Pitts is another one that, like, after his rookie season, the consensus tight end one. And if you don't follow up that good rookie season, which we've seen a lot of tight ends come in and produce as rookies and then not follow it up in year two, the market quickly sours on them. So I think this is the worst time to buy Colston Loveland because I think that we will see the market sour quickly if he isn't just an immediate 15 to 18 point per game producer. Now, if he is that, then the market slams shut and then you have no chance of buying him after that. So I think the upside here is obvious. The upside is that he is the number one weapon in a Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson offense. And he's like giving you Travis Kelce type of production. But I think the downside is pretty obvious too, is that Roman Dunze is healthy. Luther Burden takes a big step forward. Colston Loveland falls to third in the pecking order. And if that's the case, then he's going to fall down to tight end 8 in dynasty rankings by the midway point of the season.
Yeah.
Don't be putting him in that Bowers McBride tier. Just
I think he's under it for now, but he could get there. Yeah,
he could. Yes, but I was just looking and like I like Loveland. Don't get me wrong. I just feel he is so overvalued right now. Mm-hmm. I think largely because he did a lot in the playoffs, which everybody saw. But if you look, I was just looking at the TA stats, and even if you go from his. Like, his big breakout came in week 9. He had a 34-point game in TA scoring. Even from there on, he's still only tight end 5 the rest of the season and in the, like, 16-point range. He's nowhere near the Bowers, Kittle, McBride, like, type high-end consistent production. And which is great, especially he's a rookie. I'm not saying he can't go beyond that. I'm just saying, like, Dave just mentioned Laporta. Like, Laporta is still a good tight end, but he's not anywhere near that elite tier. So I need to see more from Loveland I have no interest in buying Loveland whatsoever because I feel like his price is ridiculous compared to what I think it should be.
Yeah.
But again, this is not me saying I don't like Love One. I just don't like
it. No, it's got some Pitts vibes to it, right? Yeah. Not to that level, but like you were able to trade Pitts for a lot two or three years
people
ago.
People were like asking three firsts for Pitts.
Yeah. This is crazy.
That's what the tight end market is so volatile because we've seen like a huge influx of young talent has come in. So like we're kind of talking about the creme de la creme right now when we're talking Brock Bowers, Trey McBride, and we're putting Colson Loveland in that conversation. But Sam LaPorta had his time up there and Harold Fannin is probably knocking on that door. And Kyle Pitts was just up there not too long ago. So I feel like, you know, especially with these tight ends, there's like six or seven guys right now. You can lump Tucker Kraft in there as well. Tucker Kraft is probably the best to buy of these guys coming off the ACL tear. I also think Kyle Pitts is a fantastic buy right now. He was the tight end two last year in scoring, 25 years old, and people are just like writing him for dead. So I'm always trying to buy the guys at like the bottom of that tier. When Sam LaPorta has a season where he gets 10 touchdowns and he moves up that tier, I'm not buying that guy. When Colson Loveland, because he's a little bit younger than everyone else, moves up that tier, I'm not buying that guy. I'm just going to keep trying to buy low at whoever is kind of falling to the bottom of that tier, because I expect those like six or seven tight ends just kind of keep like churning over the next half decade.
Yeah. One thing to point out, because Rocky and I always giggle about the things we get wrong. I will say Rocky sniffed out the LaPorta hype immediately last year and sold him all over the place. So that was a good move. Dave, I imagine Colston Loveland is just best ball poison, right? He's going too early and he's got downside. And yeah, it's just no touch.
But I'm not in round three. That's where he's going. That's crazy.
Yeah. Even in redraft, I've seen some redraft mocks starting to come out and he's going like early mid round three. And that's
especially
just
in my leagues with my Chicago buddies, there's 0% chance I'm getting
round one
Loveland anywhere.
Yeah. Okay. We've already heard Frank and Rocky's answers in previous weeks, but who are the rookies that Dave wound up with a lot of shares in the end in rookie drafts?
I've been asked this question on a lot of shows and I hate answering it because it's the most disgusting rookie out there.
Okay, we're going to skip it. I'm kidding.
I got a lot of Dijon Stribling and, you know, again, like I come on the show a lot and you guys know that like whatever the public has said, this is our consensus opinion. I'm just going to say, okay, well, I'm going to make my living just assuming that you all are wrong. And at the end of the day, if you look at Dijon Stribling, he could be a bust 100%. He could be the next Jonathan Mingo, Xavier Legette, Keon Coleman. But people have already like assumed that that is going to happen. And what if he's the next AJ Brown, DK Metcalf, Michael Pittman? Like when you look at the receivers that are drafted in this range, these late first, early second round picks, these guys that have big physical bodies, these guys that were productive in college, they have about, you know, a 30% hit rate. But when they do hit, they are league tilting hits that end up having immense upside. And I look at Dijon Stribling right now. Drafted 33rd overall, athleticism off the charts. His competition for targets right now is Ricky Pearsall, who I like, but he has not been able to stay on the field. Christian Kirk, absolute dust at this point in his career. And Mike Evans, who I think can still
say Joey's going to yell at you for putting Mike Evans third on that list.
But like, let's call it like it is. You know, he's getting up there in age. He didn't look like himself last year. The unbeatable streak of 1,000 years has come, or 1,000 yards has come to an end. So like, I think that the opportunity is there for the taking that Dijon Stribling can be San Francisco's wide receiver one. Now, it's a slim outcome. It's a narrow outcome. But if he ends up hitting that upside, I mean, this is just one of the best picks you could make right now. So when I came out with my initial rankings right after the NFL draft, I said he should be going 11th or 12th overall. Then I got into rookie drafts, and I was taking him kind of at that 1-2 turn, and then I started looking at ADP, and I'm like, wait, I could just wait for this guy in round three, and then I walked out of like every single draft with Dijon Stribling. So I don't know my exact exposure, but I'd guess right now that I'm about 90% on Dijon Stribling. Just I think that people were way too quick to talk about the downside without even mentioning the upside case for him.
Dijon Stribling in round three is awesome. I would have 90% of him too if that were where he was sitting, but... It's so funny, right? You said something that I need to ask about. Are you putting Legette in the trash bin that fast? I understand I know it's McMillan but he's still first round pick and
yeah. I mean I was very
he's not Keon
last year.
Yeah,
I was very in on him last year. I think like. If you notice, I didn't put Quentin Johnston in that because I think Quentin Johnston is very much so on the right side of that. Mm-hmm. Maybe I was too quick to lump Legette in there, but maybe I'm too quick to lump Keon Coleman in there. Like, Yeah. Keon Coleman's going into year three. Like, it wasn't that long ago that we were all about the year three breakouts, and now we're just burying guys after their rookie season. So maybe I should have just stuck with Treylon Burks and Jonathan Mingo and drew the line there. Maybe we shouldn't be lumping in Leggett and Coleman quite yet.
Yeah. Hey, it's funny you guys brought it up on the Best Ball Show. DJ Moore is going lower than most, so maybe most people thought originally. So maybe there is secret Keon Coleman hype still, or Shakir hype, or something that's pushing DJ down. So it's interesting for sure.
And Jeff Bell and I, we just talked about that Keon Coleman is one of our favorite late round best ball targets. You can get him in round 20 right now, even if he's not good. Like, he could still, now that they have a legitimate wide receiver one in Buffalo, why can't Keon Coleman give us like kind of a scam Gabe Davis type of season where he's pulling a 13% target share, but he's scoring 8 touchdowns? Like, there's still that out for Keon Coleman that I'm not trying to bury the guy yet. It's been bad what we've seen so far, but he's still a young guy who can get right.
Yeah. This is why you should listen to Dave for best ball advice, because Dave highlighted a type of drafter in best ball that just picks players they like at random, which felt very personal and targeted, because that's how I do my eliminator drafts. So everyone should listen to Dave on where to get best ball value, and not to anyone on the show. So moving on to TA2, he said, my co-manager and I have a rebuilder with Jonathan Taylor, Tootin, Isaiah Likely, and Odunze. So he said, any of those you'd be looking to keep through the rebuild? Definitely not Jonathan Taylor.
I think Odunze would be the only one. If I could flip Tootin right now.
I'm scared of him. There's a lot of crod hype right now, as the footballers would call it. There's a lot of Rodriguez hype from Cohen right now.
There should be. I wrote an article that was like very off the cuff, like, you know, just 30 minutes after that was announced. And it was one of those, like, as I was digging into it, I've always liked Chris Rodriguez. I always thought that he was an underrated player. And then as I'm writing this article, I just like persuaded myself through the process of writing this article that like Chris Rodriguez is the guy you want in Jacksonville. An unbelievable efficiency profile last year. He was top 5 in success rate, missed tackles forced, and yards after contact per attempt. Like, that is unbelievable. Like, he's up there with like Devon Achane on an efficiency profile. And then you also see the connection with Liam Cohen, that like he was Liam Cohen's workhorse at Kentucky. Liam Cohen talked about how hard it was going back to Kentucky without Chris Rodriguez when he had his second stint there. And then you get James Gladstone, the GM in Jacksonville, saying that like Chris Rodriguez does things on a field that even Superman couldn't do. I mean, like, the vibes are immaculate right now. Like, everything seems to be lining up for Chris Rodriguez. And Bashaul Tootin, I know he's got the athletic profile, but like, has some vision problems, has some footwork problems, has some fumbling problems. So also doesn't catch the ball that well. So if I look at like this three-headed committee in Jacksonville, where I think LaQuinn Allen quietly on the field for like almost a third of the snaps last year for Jacksonville, like, he is their passing down specialist, runs routes like a wide receiver. And then you've got Chris Rodriguez, who can be that guy that can keep the offense on schedule, is a hammer at the goal line. I don't know what's left for Tootin besides the kind of low-calorie touches. Like, he might be getting early down work between the 20s. They might pull him out at the red zone for Chris Rodriguez. They might pull him out for LaQuinn Allen on passing downs. Tootin is a guy right now that I am trying to sell if I have him anywhere.
Yeah. Rocky, I'll throw the second part of the question to you. How would you approach trying to get good value for them, even though we've now entered the offseason dead zone? How do you trade Taylor right now? Is kind of the real question.
I mean, you don't. That's my answer. Yeah. I don't think people are looking to buy a running back in June. So Taylor, Tootin, both of them, I would be trying to sell more as we get closer to the point scoring season. I agree with Dave too that Odunze is the one I'd want to hold too. It's also going back to the Loveland thing now that I'm thinking about. Just like, there's also two other very viable pass catchers there that haven't like broken out yet, but both of them very talented, both of them highly drafted. And I think people are just like not like, I feel like those two are undervalued, whereas Colston Loveland is way overvalued at this point. But I thought you were going to say something there. Okay.
No, I was going to say it's that stupid thing, positional scarcity, that I hate so much. And it's why Loveland gets put on this giant stair step ahead of equally talented, if not more talented, wide receivers.
Yeah. Colston Loveland. And yeah, so I mean, how you get good? I mean, it's hard. Like, it is kind of the dead zone. So I don't know that you're getting great value for anyone right now. I mean, you're getting fair value probably if you're getting anything done. You're not. I don't know that you're getting good value. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's any special thing you can do now? Send offers basically, like, to try and get people moving. Cause I'm guilty of that too. I'm not going around sending out a lot of offers in June either. So, if you're trying to get value, on the guys that I think you might be able to sell now. Yes. Like I said, I don't know that I would hold a Dunze, but if you want to sell him, I also would try and hold him too and hope that he does outproduce what people are expecting. With DJ Morgan, with maybe Colson Loveland not being quite as much of a focal point potentially, and hope maybe you can get more from him once the season starts and he starts putting some numbers up. Yeah. And I don't know what to make of Likely, so you guys can figure that out.
Likely is the weirdest. This is another one that I like wrote the immediate reaction article right after he signed with the Giants, and I feel like Likely's such a polarizing player, and he shouldn't be. Like, we know exactly what this guy is. Like, he's a tight end 20 something every single year. And like, yep. I think if you could draft him as tight end 20 something, there would be upside there that would make him alluring. But every year he's like finishes as like the tight end 28. And then he gets drafted the next year as the tight end 12. And then he finishes at the tight end 26 and then gets drafted again as the tight end 12. Like, we just overdraft this guy every single year. I love the idea of drafting him for the upside, but you just never get any sort of discount on him. Like, people are always drafting him at his ceiling outcome.
Yeah, agreed. And it's funny. Likely's kind of got some Hunter Henry vibes in him, where Hunter Henry for the last like 5 years has had a big week one every year. Yes. And Likely kind of does the same thing. So if you can hold Likely until he has that monster week one and then spin a narrative that Likely's the new tight end like to hold on the Giants, like, that's what you should be doing.
And especially this year, though, because if he does get out to a hot start, it's expected. Like, he knows John Harbaugh and like knows what John Harbaugh asks of his players. And I know it's going to be the Matt Nagy's offense, but like, there's still going to be some Harbaugh roots in there. So I think he is going to be the hot start candidate. And then Malik Nabers comes back late in the year. So like, this is another year where it's prime for a hot Isaiah Likely start. And this year, just don't make the mistake of holding the bag, flip him immediately when that happens.
Yes, exactly. And I don't think Dio Johnson's going away either, by the way. I think he's somewhat talented. Like, he's not, you know, Travis Kelce, but he's going to be present and definitely scoring points. So he said, how did Dave become so intelligent and amazing? The people need to answer so that we can emulate his greatness. So I'm gonna spin this question a little bit. Dave, what is kind of your process? Are you a film watcher? Are you a stat reader? Are you both? There's always kind of different ways people go about analyzing players.
Yeah, I do everything, and it's just kind of like happened on its own over the last couple of years. Like during the rookie process, when I'm first learning about these players, that's when I really put on like my film grinder hat, and I am watching film on all of the incoming rookies, and I want to find out about their movements and their styles and their strengths and their weaknesses and all that sort of stuff. Once we get through the NFL draft, then I weigh draft capital pretty heavily, because I think that that has just proven to be one of the best metrics that's correlated to fantasy success. Once we get in season, then it is just looking through the numbers more than anything else. I feel like that's what guides us. Of course, there's a lot of context that goes with those numbers as well. So, like, to try to explain what my process is, a lot of it really comes down to the articles that I'm writing. Like, I write an article every single Monday in season that I start right when the games kick off on Sunday afternoon, and I write through Monday evening, and I basically do write-ups on every single player. So like, there's nothing that can possibly slip through the cracks, because I have to look at every single player's game logs. I have to look at their trends. I have to look at their upcoming matchups. So, you know, we throw this term process around all the time, and I know that there's a lot of people out there that have algorithmic models and, you know, kind of taking the work out for them to let the numbers do the talking. But my process is just being steeped in football, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Like, I do not take off. I'm constantly talking with smart individuals like you guys and bouncing takes off of you and taking in new information. When I'm not doing this, being on shows, I'm writing articles where I'm researching and looking things up. I'm tweaking my rankings. I'm rewatching games. I'm just doing whatever I can to just absorb as much knowledge as possible.
Yeah. I'm picturing you with a notepad on like the side of a mountain, writing down your thoughts on Isaiah Likely or something.
Yeah. Oh, notepad guy. You know me well. I go through a legal pad just about once a week.
Yeah, I could totally see that. Okay. I saw Dave is starting his divisional breakdown series. So which is each of your favorite division and why? Does the answer change in real life versus fantasy? Meaning, do you have a division you love in real life but hate for fantasy?
I'm going to guess Frank and I are going to go with the NFC North, and I bet Rocky goes with the NFC East. Am I right?
Probably yes.
Yeah. Well, if I were going to take out the North, I think the AFC West is fascinating. I think the Broncos are going to be great again. The Chiefs could come back if Mahomes comes back. The Chargers are taking a step forward. The Raiders are taking a step forward. That division could absolutely cannibalize each other. And the division leader could be 10-6, 11-5, something like that, or 11-6.
Number two. But I love the NFC North. There's just so many fun storylines in the NFC North, especially the changes this year, like Green Bay finally clearing out some wide receivers and consolidating that offense. Kyler Murray in Minnesota. You know, the changes that we've seen from the Lions over the last couple of years. The ascension of the Bears. Like, you know, I'm obviously biased, but I am very excited to talk NFC North with Jeff Bell in a couple of weeks.
Yes. Rocky, I assume it's the East.
I guess I've never really thought of it, but I've never really thought about if I have a favorite division. So
do you like rivalry games like Ravens Steelers or something like that? That's not in your division.
I mean, I guess, but I don't know that any one specific division even comes to mind for that. Even I've liked the Bills Chiefs over the years, and they're not even in the same division, that kind of thing. So the big rivalry games are always fun. Yeah, Steelers, Ravens. But I don't think I don't really have a favorite. I guess it would be the NFC East just because the Eagles are in it. And I'm very familiar with all the other teams, even though I hate them.
NFC West is also fun if we could just swap out the Cardinals for any other team.
Anyone else.
There's three really fun teams to talk about in the NFC West. Yeah. And then it's like that meme with the three dragon heads and then the one
dragon. The one silly one. Yeah, no, it's and it's funny, in fantasy versus reality, it's actually flipped on its head for the North. Like, I hate the Vikings normally, but a lot of my favorite fantasy players are now on the Vikings. Justin Jefferson and Kyler, and I liked Aaron Jones for a long time, even when he was a Packer. It's just all that stuff kind of goes out the window, which is hard sometimes when you're watching Justin Jefferson score 180 yards and two touchdowns on the Bears, but you know he's scoring you a ton of points. So, okay. What is your favorite non-TA, non-SFB league format and why? I'm sure Dave's going to say best ball.
I do like best ball, but I've playing in this redraft format that I just kind of cooked up, nothing super crazy, but I've realized that it really balances out the running back and wide receiver balance that seems skewed heavily towards wide receivers. So in leagues that I've been commissioning lately, what I'm doing is 0.1 point per carry and then 0.5 yards per first down, whether it's rushing or receiving. And if you look at the end of year finishes, you end up seeing that wide receivers and running backs are really tight. So I feel like so many people are just doing full PPR now in leagues that really skews heavily towards wide receivers. And this seems to be the best way, kind of the way that Superflex kind of balanced out all of the positions, just doing this 0.1 per carry, 0.5 per first down. And then I also have 0.5 per reception. With those three settings, you end up getting pretty tight running back and wide receiver production at the end of the year. So I think that it just makes it more of a pick your flavor type of draft rather than going out and trying to get positional value.
Do you have starting minimums in that? Can someone start 8 running backs and no wide receivers in that type of league, or do you have starting minimums?
So I still have starting minimums where it's going to be but I do more flexes. So I do 2 running backs, 2 wide receivers, and then 4 flex spots, and then a tight end.
Yeah. Rocky, I'm excited to hear your answer to this question because you play Survivor, you do a salary cap league, you're the weird format fantasy player. So I'm interested to hear your favorite.
Yeah, it's probably, and this actually isn't that far off though from TA, but The one I commish, I think Ryan McDowell coined it like ultra flex, where there are no starting positions. I think that's a really fun format to play. We also put a lot of different weird scoring rules in there to try and make it more enticing to draft, like, say, tight ends, when you don't need to have a tight end. But, yeah, when you can basically construct your team any kind of way. I've actually that team, I think it's 1.75. If I was starting it today, I'd probably make it 2.0 tight end premium. And a lot of people ignored tight ends because you didn't have to start them. And I've basically been loading up on tight ends ever since the league started like 7 years ago. And I've made like five of the title games.
Yeah.
Because people are undervaluing them because they figure I don't need a tight end. And I guess they're not paying close enough attention to the premium or whatever. I don't know. But yeah. It just allows for like all different kinds of means of roster construction. You know what I mean? Like, if you hate running backs, you don't need to have a running back. If you're Frank and you hate tight ends, you don't need to have a tight end. And it is super, like, you can start up to two quarterbacks, but I think technically the way I have it set, you don't even have to start a quarterback. Like, if they're, yes, they're two super flex spots, you can do whatever you want.
It sounds like SFB this year and last year.
A little bit.
Like, yeah. Two super flex spots and then eight flex spots. Yeah. That's a fun way to play. I like that.
It is a fun way to play. I play a lot of basic leagues nowadays because I don't have the brain capacity to manage like 20 leagues that all have crazy formats. So the one I'm actually most excited in is I joined Russ's Hogwarts League, where it's like the house points and all that stuff, and the groups come together and add up to points. So it's like four different divisions, but they all compete against each other division-wise. So I think that's kind of an interesting format that I'm excited to try.
That's fun.
Okay. I'm going to have terrible answers to this next one. How many NFL stadiums have you watched games at outside of your favorite team stadium? Which was your favorite and why? And if you could go to a game at one NFL stadium, which would it be? I've only been to Soldier Field. That's my answer.
I've only been to the Link.
I've been to like 50 games at Soldier Field. Family, we're lifetime season ticket holders. So I've been to a lot of Soldier Field. I've been to one game at Mile High, and that's it. And it was a Bears game.
Actually, yeah. I've been to MetLife, but it was for WrestleMania.
That's true. I have been to MetLife. I forgot that. It was Eli's like last game. It was like 10 degrees. It was freezing.
I just saw a bunch of wrestling there. So
yeah.
I've been to like 12 baseball stadiums. I've been to a lot of baseball stadiums
that we can have a conversation about. Yeah. Cause I think baseball stadiums are so unique. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, it's easy to get into. Like, you can get tickets to like almost any game. Well, I mean, probably not anymore, but like back in the day, like, you used to be able to go to a random city. They play 80 games per year in a city. You can get tickets for $10, and like, baseball stadiums are fun. And then like, you're in and out in a couple hours. Like, I feel like a football game is like such a different thing. Like, you don't just drop into a football game. Like, you kind of like build your entire day around going to a football game. So yeah, I have not done a lot of football travel, unfortunately.
Football's also the sport that's built for watching on your couch. And like, it's so much better to watch there. And if I were to
experience a new city is to like go to a stadium and like get a beer and a hot dog and just like watch a baseball game, even if you're just there for like a few innings, like that's such a fun thing to do.
Right. And if we were to talk about stadiums I haven't been to, they would actually probably be like college football stadiums. Like, I've been wanting to go to Death Valley forever and like for LSU or something like that. Like, I think that would be my answer. And then the number one baseball stadium is where Dave is. Coors Field is at the very top of my list of stadiums I want to go to.
It is sick. You got to go to one of the games that like takes place during the sunset, and then you can sit behind home field or like behind home base and you watch the sunset behind the mountains as you can see the field. Like, it is unbelievable. Perfect. And they've got the batter's eye out of the outfield. Do you know about that? Like, instead of just a green box, they have like all of this like natural Colorado foliage, so it's like this like mini jungle out in the batter's eye in center field, and there's like rabbits and squirrels and birds and stuff that live in there. It's wild.
There's a zoo in the baseball Colorado stadium. I love that. And you could probably get in for nothing because the Rockies are terrible.
Yep.
So you're probably very easy to get into. Rocky, we're kind of pivoting to baseball. Do you have a favorite baseball stadium you've been to?
I've only been to the Citizens.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm not a big traveler, so
I get that.
You got to get to Chicago and go to Wrigley Field with Frank.
Yes,
I have been to Chicago before, but I did not get to go to. I was there for a weekend for a wedding, but I did not get to go to a Cubs or a White Sox game. Yeah,
I lived across the street from Wrigley Field for what was that, 2014? And I would have to get off the red line and walk past the stadium to get to my house. So this was 2014. This was before the World Series. You used to be able to get tickets for $1. There would be scalpers outside the stadium right before the game selling for $1. So I would just get a ticket. I'd go in there, you know, by myself. And like I was saying, just like grab a beer and a hot dog, watch a few innings, and then go home and finish the game on TV. I would do that like a few times a month. It was it was a fun year.
Now bleacher seats are $150, which feels illegal, which is just crazy.
No.
Yeah, I know. It completely takes out the point of bleacher seats.
Disgusting. We were close enough that when they would have concerts at Wrigley Field, we would climb up on the roof of our building, and we would just bring a cooler up there and some chairs up there, and we could like hear the shows crystal clear from our house. Yeah. It was a fun time.
On that topic, I'm irrationally jealous of the show you're going to next Tuesday while you're Jimmy Eat World at Red Rocks. That sounds who's opening for Jimmy Eat World? Anyone nobody like Super 96 that?
Yeah. Nobody that I care. But then in like 3 months, I'm going back to Red Rocks again for Rise Against and Alkaline Trio, to Chicago bands. So
yeah.
And then I was just there last week seeing Santana at Red Rocks. So I try to get to Red Rocks a few times a year. It's a fun time.
That's another venue I've wanted to cross off my list. I need to do like a whole Denver week and just cross a lot of these off.
I'll drag you up a mountain. We can go climb together.
Yeah. 4 a.m. mountain climb. Yeah, very exciting. And then his last thing is off topic. Do you have any strong NBA final stakes? He's a Knicks fan. I have never liked the Spurs until today. I'm a Chicago guy. I can't stand the Knicks. I know Ari's going to hate that, but I watched those videos with all of them like clogging up 7th Avenue celebrating. And it's just like, I pictured working there when I was first getting into finance and stuff. And I'd be like, I would have to try and go home in that. And just like that thought made me irrationally angry. It's like, I have to go through that to get home, and just something about it. But do I hate the Knicks? Yes. Would I completely like break things if they won? No. I think, you know, the story's fine. Any final takes?
I was a huge basketball fan growing up. I couldn't even tell you who's in the finals now.
Yeah, I just get that.
Stopped watching basketball a few years ago. Actually, not even that long ago, like 6 years ago, I was covering NBA for Fantasy Bros. And I was covering, it was the Kings, the Grizzlies, the Pistons, and the Bulls. And that was just 6 years ago, 7 years ago. I couldn't even tell you.
Tell you what, the Bulls look the exact same as they did 6 years ago. Yeah, they're the exact same.
I'm kind of closer to where Dave is. I'm definitely a Sixers fan. I'm not really a huge basketball fan.
Yeah.
But I live in Philly, so I automatically hate any New York team. So go Spurs.
I agree with that. And to be honest, I don't watch much basketball either, but I have a ton of friends who watch NBA, and I'm in too many group chats as it is, so I'm kind of watching it secondarily through that.
I actually am too, because my youngest is the only kid I got into sports, and he loves like every sport, and he's huge into basketball. He's like football first and then basketball.
Yeah.
And so he's really into the finals.
I care much more about the Stanley Cup. Like, I was watching Hurricanes and Knights before we got on, but that's the end of our show sheet. So that's going to be the end of our show. Thank you, Dave, for recording like 10 hours straight to be on the show today. We really appreciate it. Before we head on out, why don't you remind everyone who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do?
Yeah, Dave Kluge, Football Guys. You can find all of my content there. Just pumping out nonstop content. I've got the fantasy football show that I'm doing with Joey Wright, Jeff Bell, and then a rotating staff of Football Guys articles coming out. And then right now, the big thing I'm working on is the divisional preview series. AFC East just dropped tonight. What is this? Tuesday night. So you can check that out on YouTube, podcast, wherever you listen to that. We'll be back with the AFC South later this week, doing two divisions per week, about two episodes or 2 hours per episode. So that's basically all we'll be doing during the month of June. And then with Joey Wright, we're doing our positional redraft tiers and rankings. So just had wide receivers come out yesterday. We'll have running backs next week, tight ends the week after. So stay busy over here at Football Guys.
If you watch any Football Guys content, Dave's probably on it. So he's the everyman in the company. So we always appreciate him coming on. Before we move on to our stuff, you usually run Denver Live for Scott Fish. So are you doing that again this year? Where is it? Can people come hang out? Stuff like that.
Yes, my wife runs it. I have taken my name off as the event coordinator because she was doing 90% of the work, and like my name was on there, and then everyone would be like, oh, Dave, you run such a great event. And I said, this is not fair. Like, she's doing all the work. She's making this happen. So we are doing it again this year. This will be our third year in a row at Improper City, which is a really cool place. It's just like they've got drinks, you know, and tea and coffee and stuff and food trucks, but it has just slowly grown. The first year we did this was just one group. We had one division in Denver, and we just got together on our own accord. It was me and my wife and the pole boats and a few other people. And then year two, we had two leagues. This year, I think we're ramping up to six leagues, but we've got the entire back half of Improper City rented out. It is a really, really good time. And I think what's fun too is Denver is a tourist city. Like, people like to travel here. So it's not just people from Denver at this draft. We have people that come in from all over the country. Clayton Gray, the general manager of Football Guys, he and his entire family are coming in from Arkansas, and they're going to be drafting there. We've had Sam Wagman come out from Florida. Jeff Blaylock comes up from Albuquerque, New Mexico every single year. We have people coming in from all over the country. It's a really, really fun time.
Do you know the date and
I should
when that is?
I think it's June 20th. June 20th at noon Mountain Time. Improper City opens at 11, so we'll be getting there a little bit early, but drafts start at noon. And then Scott was there 2 years ago. John Bosch was there last year. I think John is coming again this year. It's just, it's a fun time. It is a really, really fun time. Even if you aren't drafting, just come hang out. It's a blast.
I will echo that last part. I went not as a drafter last year. I am drafting this year just because it worked out better that way. And I know Rocky doesn't ever live draft, right? You're always slow draft, but you go and hang out, right? Is that kind of the thing for you?
I've actually never been to a live draft.
Okay.
So
that's the rust thing then. But I will say, just like, go and hang out. It's you can win potentially a raffle or something, like get some raffle tickets and see what you get. Like, it's always a fun thing.
On that note, my wife has, like, we have like thousands of dollars worth of donations. She has been insane driving all over the state of Colorado, going to Ball Arena and massage parlors, like, you name it. She has coupons and giveaways from like every single proprietor in Denver. Like, we have a lot of giveaways this year, so like more than you could ever imagine. I feel like once a week my wife is like taking sick days at work so she can drive around and pick up all of these stuff. Like, she has made this a part-time job, coordinating this event. So definitely show up. She puts a lot of work into it, and it's a really good time.
Yes, everyone go show up everywhere. I'll be in Chicago on July 12th, so everyone can come see me if you care about that. Our stuff, patreon.com/TRXPod. You can see our beautiful faces, as always. Cool Kids Club is our Discord channel. Talk a lot about trades. We got into a lot of the news yesterday. And then Fantasy Cares, as you've heard already, the live drafts, Underball, it's late. Underdog Best Ball, $5 drafts are in. Are in full swing right now. You can potentially win into SFB 17, I think, if you win the whole thing. SFB merch store is up and running. Just so many great designs on that on that store right now, with all the video game designs. And then you have Trivia Tuesday nights with Joey Wright, who always does a wonderful job, and the Wednesday Night Hangout, where I think they're doing another SFB mock on the new MFL, which, if you did not watch last week, new MFL looks fantastic. So we're probably about a year away from it, but it looks great. So that's about it. As Russ Fisher always told us, if you have a trading problem, you're never alone. Good night, everybody.
Night, Frank.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addict Podcast, a member of the DLS family of podcasts, and a proud member Dynasty Addict Podcast Network. Please follow your hosts at Dynasty Haha and at Dynasty FS Addict. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We will catch you next time on the Trade Addict Podcast. Poopy Pants. That is the best. See ya.